I know. It's been quite a while since we've had an episode of the podcast, but I promise I hadn't forgotten about the show, the listeners, or most importantly, the history. Now, there's been a ton of things going on in my life, and I promise there were no health scares, no emergencies, nothing exigent. As a matter of fact, it's been all positive things that have kept me away for a bit. For one, I got a dog, and trying to train him to not mess all over the house surely has been a feat. But most importantly, and I'd be remiss to not say it loud, proud, and publicly, this announcement after saying that I got a dog in no way takes away from its profound effect. But my first child came into the world the day after my birthday in September. So all the planning and prepping and mental gymnastics that went into that, on top of keeping my law practice going, keeping food on the table and the lights on, has had me stretched super, super thin. So all of that is to say the show will still be here. The show is still here. As I've expressed so many times before, I love history. I love learning, growing, and teaching as well. It will just be done in a less frequent format, and I'm sorry if that disappoints anybody, but look at it as a similar format to how Dan Carlin does hardcore history, or when Beyonce drops an album, or when someone elusive gives a tour all of a sudden. I would say Prince, but unfortunately, in my absence, he has departed from us. I mean, so essentially, hopefully, when you see it, hear about it, it's a pleasant and, in our case, hopefully, welcome surprise. So I'm going to key back up our theme music one more time, do the regular intro, and we're going to act like this is just another episode. Can we do that? I mean, hey, it's not a live show and it's already done by the time you're hearing it, so you don't really have a choice. Welcome to the Black History Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Nishad Carrington. Now, today we do a story that recently caused a bit of controversy. So you see, the History Channel did a series recently called Rise of the Barbarians, where they describe the Roman Empire as a backdrop, but provide immense detail regarding the other tribes and people around the fringes of the Romans that opened up opposition and mounted heavy-handed rebellions to their rise. The very first episode of Rise of the Barbarians, and I encourage you all to watch it, was about Hannibal Barca of Carthage. If you haven't seen the series, again, I encourage you to watch it. It was amazingly great. Well, the controversy that the History Channel kicked up was in portraying Hannibal to be a black man. Some people of a lighter persuasion got a bit up in arms at the notion that the greatest military leader known to the world, who came from a country in Africa, was in fact black. Shocking, I know, but he was. Hannibal Barca of Carthage. Now, I know I've said the of Carthage a couple of times now, and that may not ring a bell to you, but let's dive into that a bit just to give some background as to where this man came from. Now, by all reports, Carthage was found in 814 BC when it gained its independence from the Phoenician state of Tyre, which was spread throughout the western Mediterranean. For most of its history, Carthage was on hostile terms with the Greeks in Sicily and especially with the Roman Republic. Now, these hostilities would culminate in the Greek-Punic Wars, Carthage and Greece, lasting a span of about 375 years. And the Punic Wars, Carthage and Rome, lasted about 115 years. Now, without much extra, Carthage is a very old place, but not one you'd readily recognize today. Today, Carthage is known as present-day Tunisia at the northernmost tip of the continent of Africa. So Carthage is old, but how does that impact our subject for the day? Well, Hannibal's father was Hamilcar Barca, who was the leading Carthaginian commander during the First Punic War. Now, Hannibal lived during a time of heavy tension and an oppressive colonial-minded regime of Rome. At the time, Rome was the established supreme colonial power over the neighboring kingdoms of Macedonia, Syracuse, Seleucid, and Carthage as well. Needless to say, North Africa was prime for the expansion of the Roman Empire. So I've mentioned before that Hamilcar was a leader of the first Punic War, and I think that would obviate showing that there was at least a second. Well, Carthage got manhandled in the first Punic War. Following this defeat, Carthage was a very broken and poor state, in such dire straits that its navy was unable to transport its army back home, and Hamilcar was forced to essentially take the long route home. Now, according to history, Hannibal begged his father to allow him to go with him, and Hamilcar agreed, but with a condition. He demanded that Hannibal swear that for as long as he lived, he would never be a friend of Rome. Now, I think that this was deeper than just being a quote friend, but Rome came to conquering nations and gave them the option either essentially get down or lay down. And I'm sure Hamilcar wanted assurances that Hannibal would fight to the bitter end. Hamilcar would go on to attempt a conquering of Hispania, but unfortunately he drowned in battle. Now, Hannibal's brother, Hasdrubal the Fair, succeeded their father, and Hannibal served as an officer under him. In direct contention to what Hamilcar had forced Hannibal to promise, Hasdrubal would actually try to consolidate the Carthaginian interests in the region, and even went as far as to sign a treaty with Rome, agreeing that Carthage would not expand farther north of the Ebro as long as Rome wouldn't expand any further south. Now, Hasdrubal was assassinated in 221 BC, and Hannibal was proclaimed commander-in-chief of the army and was confirmed by the government. Upon seeing Hannibal, a Roman scholar of the time had this to say, quote, "No sooner had he arrived, the old soldiers fancied they saw Hamilcar in his youth given back to them. The same bright look, the same fire in his eye, the same trick of countenance and features. Never was one in the same spirit more skillful to meet opposition, to obey, or to command," end quote. When he first assumed power, Hannibal spent the first 2 years consolidating and forging his empire. He completed the conquest of Hispania that his father began, which is modern-day Spain and Portugal. Then he took the bold move of attacking the strongest center of the Iberian Peninsula, the city of Alithia. This caused the people in this region to bow before the Carthaginian leader and contribute mercenary soldiers to his ever-growing army. But Hannibal wasn't done. I don't want to give too much credit here, but it's necessary. Rome began taking notice of the progress and strength with which the Carthaginians were growing, and in response, they started to siege more cities to fortify their position with protectorates. But remember, Rome and Hasdrubal had entered into a treaty. Hannibal hadn't forgot this fact and used that to his advantage. Of course, being the driven individual that he was, Hannibal was already planning to attack Rome, but this action by Rome in breaching the treaty gave him all the cover he needed to start his war. To do it, though, in the fashion he wanted, took guts, determination, skill, knowledge, and truth be told, a little bit of crazy. I know I'm leaving you hanging here, but right after this word from our sponsor, we'll be getting to the meat of the Hannibal legend.
The Notorious VAG. Finally, a publication for women by women. Do you have questions about your health and you're too embarrassed to phone a friend? Do you wish your doctor would make house calls? Or are you just curious for more knowledge about your own body? The Notorious VAG.com is here to answer all of those questions and more. Written by Dr. T, a respected female obstetrician and gynecologist, the Notorious VAG will entertain you with tales straight from the exam room, while informing you and dispelling the countless myths that exist about our female nether regions. So, if you're ready to be empowered with knowledge about your own health, visit thenotoriousvag.com today. And be sure to subscribe to get our semi-weekly posts. Again, that's thenotoriousvag.com, and follow us on Twitter at NotoriousVAGDRT, a publication for women, by women, empowering women.
Welcome back. So right here, let's clear up a little bit of a historical misnomer that exists. So a lot of people understand and know that Hannibal was known for a march. I won't go any further because we're going to really get into that more later. But this march was originally planned by his brother, Hasdrubal the Fair, before he was assassinated. However, as well before he was assassinated, the Romans found out about this plan. But it would have appeared that the Romans believed that the threat of attack died with Hasdrubal. Oh, how they were wrong. Hannibal left the city of New Carthage on the tip of Spain late in 218 BC. But of course, this was no easy task. He took a detachment of 20,000 troops and fought his way through, heading northward up the Mediterranean coast into Gaul, or present-day France and Belgium, until he reached the Pyrenees Mountains. Yes, mountains. But the Pyrenees weren't the only mountain standing in his way. There was also the Alps, which, for those who don't know, the Alps are the highest and most extensive mountain range in all of Europe. The Alps stretch about 750 miles, covering 8 present-day countries, those being Austria, France, Germany, Italy, Liechtenstein, Monaco, Slovenia, and Switzerland. But again, along the entire way through these ranges, Hannibal and his men would also be battling the Gauls, a more than formidable opponent who for years and years had given Rome its own source of headaches. By the time Hannibal reached the foot of the Alps, he arrived with approximately 38,000 infantrymen, 8,000 cavalry, and 38 elephants. I'm sure you are wondering, where did the extra men come from? Well, in ancient battle, when you conquered a land, oftentimes you took the surviving men on as foot soldiers, or forming strategic alliances with various tribes along the way, the same thing could happen as well. Now, history scholars, of which I am surely not one, have held great debate as to which exact route Hannibal and his men took through the Alps. The cities and names of mountains are of no consequence to our 35 to 45 minute podcast, so I won't get into it here, but just know, as I'm sure you can well imagine, North Africans traversing the largest mountain range in Europe, well, of the swelling numbers he took into the Alps, only about 20,000 infantry men and 4,000 cavalry survived the journey. But worse yet, as the animal is one never before seen on a Roman battlefield, only a few of his 38 elephants remained. Now, I'm sure you can imagine, Rome was not expecting to see a fighting force appear over the Alps and essentially in their backyard. In fact, Rome believed that they would be fighting the war in Hispania and sent a stronghold of soldiers there to intercept Hannibal. But he defeated them with relative ease. Now, the impact of Hannibal's cross-Alps trip shook the entire Mediterranean region and has rippling repercussions that would last for more than 2 decades to follow. Here's the thing. Rome was clearly strong. I'd liken them to a militarily, probably to the United States present day. And just as the United States has a geographical advantage today in that there are only 2 countries on its border, Canada and Mexico, Rome did as well. For an invasion to come to the United States' doorstep, someone would either have to fly or sail across the Atlantic or the Pacific Oceans, or come through Canada or Mexico, and obviously any of those maneuvers would be detected well before arrival. Well, Rome wasn't very much different. Italy itself is a peninsula surrounded on most sides by water, but the real key to their dominance and isolation from invasion was the Alps to the north that separated Italy from France. As I mentioned how many men Hannibal lost along the way, crossing the Alps at the time was thought to be virtually impossible with men, let alone heavy artillery, in Hannibal's case, the elephants. But Hannibal proved the naysayers wrong and made it happen. Now, obviously, Rome was not about to just lay down and give up. There were numerous skirmishes and battles along the way. The Battle of Trebia brought Hannibal a victory due to the strength of his superior cavalry and earned the Carthaginians the support of the Gauls. This took his numbers back upwards, closer to 40,000 infantrymen. Now, the Battle of Lake Trasimene saw Hannibal change tactics just a bit. Originally, he planned to march into the Roman capital and do battle at the stronghold of the empire. But this battle gave him a change of heart. Due to the land conditions being exceptionally flooded, Hannibal lost a significant number of men and his own right eye, as a matter of fact, due to conjunctivitis, or as what we would call today, pink eye. But Hannibal kept fighting on. Trasimene provided Hannibal the chance to execute the first recorded turning movement in all of history. Now, I know I probably just said something that most of you have never heard of. What is a turning movement? Essentially, it's a military movement where the attacking forces reach the rear of the defenders' forces and then stick the defenders into a pocket. If you can visualize it, think about it in sports terms, and I'll use football to be exact. Imagine the defensive line, predominantly the defensive ends, getting the best of the offensive tackles and forcing the quarterback to step up into the pocket. Well, he's a sitting duck. He's got an attack coming from the front while weaker. This real strength is coming from behind, and he can't fight on all fronts because he doesn't have eyes on all of movements going on around him. So Hannibal invented this maneuver, predominantly because the operations of the Romans relied mainly on center front brute force, crushing the opposition. Well, that would leave their flanks vulnerable and weakened. Hannibal was intelligent enough to take advantage of this. Hannibal destroyed, and I mean destroyed, the Roman army here and hit them with the most costly ambush they had ever suffered to date. At that point, Hannibal realized he had rid the Romans of the last force that could stop his march to Rome. But he was also smart enough to know that he couldn't take the capital without proper equipment to bust down fortified city walls. So instead of heading directly into the capital, Hannibal decided to flout and exploit his conquest and headed deeper into Italy to encourage and recruit additional forces eager to revolt. Now, right here, let's stop and pause for a quick second and just kind of discuss a little bit of the geography of the country of Italy. So, as I mentioned, Hannibal came from the north over the Alps from France and then marched down the coast of the Mediterranean, which, if we're looking at the map of Italy, would be the western side of Italy. So the Battle of Trasimene is probably happening about midway down the coast. Rome is almost smack dab in the center of the country of Italy. So what Hannibal essentially did was he realized that he did not have the equipment necessary to march straight into the stronghold of the city. So he continued further south into Italy and said, "Let me build some forces." Now, his strategy did work to a degree, but around this time, winter was coming and he knew it wouldn't be smart to try and outlast the Roman forces in that weather. He and his forces were able to take cover in the southeastern plains of Italy. Now, come the spring of 216 BC, Hannibal took a broad initiative to overtake a supply line, and by doing so, placed himself between the Romans and their supplies coming from the sea. The Romans knew they couldn't sustain Hannibal's arrogance and posturing, and put together a new army, hoping to succeed by overwhelming him through sheer strength and weight of numbers. The Romans gathered a force estimated on the high side to be 100,000 and the low side 50,000. The Romans marched south toward Hannibal and caught him on the banks of the Aufidus River. Hannibal capitalized on Roman eagerness and used a similar tactic as he had at Trasimene and again enveloped the Roman army. This eliminated the numbers advantage that the Romans had and significantly shrunk the combat zone. The Romans took the bait. Now, they pierced easily through the weak center of Hannibal and the Carthaginians and end up hemmed within the Carthaginian forces with no reasonable place for escape. Hannibal and his small team of forces decimated the Romans, with estimates being 50 to 70,000 Romans killed or captured. This battle ended up being one of the most bloody in all of human history when comparing the number of lives lost within a single day. Needless to say, after this defeat, the Romans were more than hesitant to confront Hannibal and the Carthaginians in battle again. Hannibal fought in no more major battles in Italy for the rest of the war. Now, many historians believe that a large part of Hannibal's reticence to take the war to Rome's front door was the lack of commitment from Carthage to provide more men, money, and material to the effort. Hannibal continued to be successful in the battles he engaged in, but at the same time, the Romans had a pretty good strategy. Whether purposeful or not, actually. By depriving Hannibal of one large-scale battle, and instead attacking with smaller skirmishes, they were able to tire him and his forces out, and implicitly worked to create unrest in the troops. After that, for a few years, Hannibal and his forces were forced to maintain a scorched earth policy and get their supplies from sparse operations throughout southern Italy. Over the course of time, Hannibal was unable to maintain his stronghold, his Italian allies didn't support him properly, and he was essentially stranded and abandoned by his own government, and therefore wasn't able to match the resources of Rome. You might be wondering, how did Carthage abandon Hannibal, especially when it's not as though he was a rogue element and succeeded so hard in mowing down the Romans? Well, Carthage's politic was wrapped in a ruling oligarchy. There was a Carthaginian Senate, but the real power of Carthage was held in the inner Council of 30 nobles and a board of judges from the powerful ruling families known as the 104. The makeup of the council and the 100 was from the wealthy commercial families of Carthage. Two primary political factions, what we would think of today as political parties, operated in Carthage. First, the War Party, also known as the Barkids, which ironically enough was Hannibal's family name, and the Peace Party, led by Hanno II the Great. Needless to say, Hanno and his influence over the Peace Party was instrumental in denying Hannibal's requested reinforcements. In 212 BC, Hannibal was able to capture the Italian port city of Tarentum, but couldn't control its harbor. That started the process of tide turning in the favor of Rome. The Romans mounted two heavy campaigns against the city of Capua, and it fell in 211 BC. They took over Syracuse and decimated the Carthaginian army in Sicily. After Hannibal's loss at Tarentum, the bastion he had created in southeast Italy crumbled. But adding to this was the fact that his brother Hasdrubal lost the Battle of Metaurus around mid-Italy. Adding insult to injury, after Hasdrubal's defeat, the Roman forces killed him, cut off his head, and brought it to the walls of Hannibal's encampment, and kindly tossed it over the wooden staked wall. If that didn't send a message, nothing would have. Now in 203 BC, after nearly 15 years of fighting in Italy, and with the military strength of Carthage failing, Hannibal was recalled to Carthage to command the forces defending the homeland against a Roman invasion led by Scipio Africanus. Hannibal immediately sailed back home and met with Scipio to negotiate a peace treaty in 202 BC. Eventually, the peace plan was approved by Rome. In the end, Carthage was permitted to keep its African territory, but was forced to forfeit its overseas empire, in addition to reducing its military fleet and paying a war indemnity. But Carthage reneged on its end of the deal, and emboldened by both Hannibal's return and increased supplies, Rome and Carthage engaged in the famous Battle of Zama. Zama was the decisive battle that showed the cracks in Hannibal's prior invincibility. Zama was different than any other battle of the Second Punic War. At Zama, Hannibal was not only getting old, but also suffering from mental exhaustion and failing health after having fought for a decade and a half in Italy. Well, on top of that, though Carthage had the advantage in numbers and 80 war elephants, Rome was motivated. And I mean motivated. The Roman cavalry won an early victory at Zama, and at one point it would have appeared that Hannibal was on the verge of victory, but Scipio rallied his men and attacked Hannibal's rear. This two-pronged attack caused the Carthaginian formation to collapse on itself. With the leader defeated, the Carthaginians were forced to surrender. At Zama, Carthage lost 20,000 troops and suffered another 15,000 injuries. On the other hand, the Romans only suffered 2,500 casualties. Essentially, Zama proved to be the end of the military might that Carthage held and ended its chances of ever competing for dominance again in the Mediterranean. Now, at the end of Zama, Hannibal was only 43 years old. Now, present day, that would sound like a relatively young age, but we're talking 203 BC. That's kind of old. He's up there in age at this point. But even though he's getting old and obviously can't fight the same way militarily, he showed he possessed the skills to not only be a formidable soldier, but also a great statesman as well. As with most, the oligarchy of Carthage was ever corrupt, and this gave Hannibal an opportunity to rise in the political ranks, and he was elected chief magistrate. One of Hannibal's most important acts was to reform the 104 and mandate that membership be directly elected rather than co-opted to the position. He used the citizenry's support to change the term of office from a lifetime to 1 year, with a term limit of 2 years. Under Hannibal, just as when he had led the military, the economic situation of Carthage reached renewed heights. The economic prosperity of Carthage terrified Rome, and it led them to demand that Hannibal surrender. At his advanced age, unable to personally fight, and with Carthage unable to mount another offensive, Hannibal went into a voluntary exile. His first stop was Tyre, a port city in Lebanon, then to Ephesus, just southwest of present-day Turkey, and finally to an honorable reception in Syria, where Antiochus III was himself planning an offensive against Rome. Hannibal, being present and obviously with prior experience in tow, noticed that the Syrians would be terribly overmatched by Rome and advised Antiochus to put together a fleet, sail troops, and land in southern Italy. But like many a headstrong or simply ill-advised men, Antiochus chose not to listen to Hannibal and decided he wouldn't entrust the general to any sort of important positions within his military, though Hannibal even offered to lead the troops himself. Now, through the passage of time, it makes it very difficult to verify conclusively, but Hannibal is reported to have said this about Antiochus, quote, "I have seen during my lifetime many old fools, but this one beats them all." Now, I'm sure as you can very well imagine, in 191 BC, the Romans destroyed Antiochus at the Battle of Thermopylae, and he ran back to Syria with his tail tucked between his legs. Not quite sure what led to this act, but the very next year in 190 BC, it appears that Hannibal's welcome in Syria had worn, and Antiochus was prepared to offer him up to the Romans. So Hannibal fled the country and went to Armenia, and then to Crete and Prussia, where Artaxias was battling Rome's ally, King Eumenes of Pergamon, in present-day Turkey. Now, Hannibal served the Prussians in this war and changed up his tactics just a bit, as he was commanding a naval vessel this time around instead of ground troops. One such instance of Hannibal's fighting involved a victory where he had large pots thrown onto Eumenes' ships. Now, I know that sounds simple enough, but those pots were each filled to the brim with venomous snakes. As you can imagine, for decades, Hannibal was serving as a thorn in the sides of both Rome and their allies. So after Hannibal led the Prussian forces to two more wins in battle over Eumenes, the Romans got involved and threatened the region. So the Prussians agreed to give him up, but Hannibal just wouldn't allow himself to end up in the hands of his lifelong sworn enemy. So here's the thing. There's a great deal of speculation as to the exact year and cause of his death, because both are unknown with any specificity. So the writer Pausanias wrote that Hannibal died after mounting his horse and injuring his finger on a sword and developing a fever and then dying just 3 days later. Now, another ancient writer says that he died on the coast of Turkey after taking poison stored in a ring he always kept with him, leaving behind a letter that read, quote, "Let us relieve the Romans from their anxiety they have so long experienced, since they think it tries their patience too much to wait for an old man's death." The year of his death is reported to have been anywhere between 183 BC and 181 BC, but suffice to say that Hannibal kept the promise he made to his father, fought with the Romans and their allies until he couldn't anymore, and never ended up in their hands. So Hannibal's military legend left a great deal to history, and his reign of terror on the Romans was unmatched, even to the point of their senators having a popular saying to express fear or anxiety that said, "Hannibal ante portas," meaning, "Hannibal is at the gates." So that's all I got. I promise the break between now and the next episode won't be quite as long. The emails and show reviews you all have been leaving for us have not gone unnoticed, I promise. And to a large degree, they really did encourage me to come back for this episode in particular. The feedback is more than appreciated, and hopefully we will continue to not disappoint. As always, if you have any feedback you'd like to leave for us, please feel free to drop a review on iTunes or shoot us an email at info@thisiscarrington.com. Again, that email is info@thisiscarrington.com. I'm out. I have a hungry baby I gotta feed and a puppy that hopefully hasn't already messed in my house somewhere, probably in a corner that I'll step in the dark. But until the next time, remember that only steel can sharpen steel. Take care and see you next time.